that LeBron injury helped him. And I think LeBron talked about how he's the number one option, right? We're going to play through AD. But in reality, you know, who does the team look to when they get the rebound? They're looking for LeBron. They initiate the offense. They're looking at him because he's LeBron. He's arguably the greatest player of all time. He's the guy you kind of look to. He went out. People were writing the Lakers off, talking about how their season's over. There was a lot of issues about Russ and how can he play with everybody, move Russ to the bench. They play through AD more than they ever have before. And he begins to deliver. Welcome to the CJ McCollum Show. I'm being joined by, his screen says, Anthony Alfonso, but he's better known as Izzy Gutierrez. I'm back in New Orleans during a homestand in which we've had a lot of games at home. I think we've won 9 out of our last 11. Guys are playing extremely well. I think Izzy has been watching more New Orleans basketball than he's ever watched before. Before I talk about our Pelicans, I'm going to let you talk about our Pelicans.
Yeah, man. So I love watching you guys play. It's a lot better when everybody's playing, when BI is playing, when you're playing. And now that you're back, it's been great. I'm curious about a few things. Like, I mean, you guys are, I mean, as we record this, like just a half a game behind first place in the Western Conference. And it's feeling like you belong there. You know, what we've been talking about the whole season so far, but like, with guys in and out, like how have you been able to do that 9 out of 11 thing? I know our boy GTA just hit 8 threes in a game the other day, but he's not alone in sort of filling those gaps of who's missing, right?
Yeah, I think our coach has talked about it a lot throughout the season, the importance of preparation, the importance of being professional, the importance of staying ready, understanding that it's such a long season. Everybody's roles will be vital in the success of the overall team. And there might be some games where you don't play at all. Might be some games where you're out of the rotation or you're only playing 5 to 15 minutes. And there might be some nights where you start, like Dyson Daniels, who's had some DMPs, but also has become a member of our rotation, has also started the last few games. You got Nazi Marshall, who started some games with Brandon Ingram out. You got Hernan Gomez, who's started some games. He's gotten some DMPs, and then he comes off the bench in a game in which JV picks up 4 fouls in 12 minutes, and he ends up giving us 12 points and 8 rebounds in 16 minutes off the bench. So I think it's a cast of guys who stay ready and continue to work on their games and take advantage of opportunities. And the work has showed in Jose obviously improving his jump shot, the development of Trey Murphy, the development of a lot of our younger guys. Devontae Graham's playing a lot better this season. He's knocking down shots. Our bench unit has been sensational throughout the year. You could argue they've played better than the starters in terms of plus minus. There's articles being written about how well their on off court is, how well some of the lineups are with Larry Nance and myself and Jose Alvarado and different guys, including Zion, obviously. But the way they're playing is infectious in terms of pushing tempo, in terms of knocking down shots, defending at a high level. I think our defense is one over our last 10 games. I think on the season, we're top 6 or top 7. Defensive team should be a top 10 offensive team. And that's with, like you said before, Herb Jones not even playing, an all-world defender. Brandon Ingram, an all-world player in general, not playing. I don't know how many games our starters have played together. I'm fresh off of COVID, so I missed 4 or 5 games. And Z's missed 5 or 6 games, and we still figured out a way to be second in the West. And that's a credit to our organization for choosing the right players, bringing the right guys in, drafting accordingly, and then our staff developing the players.
Can you talk to me about Trey Murphy III, by the way, who, listen, I forget who it was that told me this, but somebody mentioned that unless you've been in the league for a while and have some sort of like 3-point accolade, you can't have Trey in your name twice. All right. Trey III is a little much, but explain Trey Murphy III to me, because against Denver, he had this one, there was this one play Zion kind of drove and it was swing, swing, swing. And he just went right through the middle of the lane. I think, who was it on? Jovic, but he just kind of went two hands, cocked it, and just looked ridiculously easy. It was on Jokic. Okay. And just what type of player he is, and what do we still have yet to see from him? Because it seems like he's got a lot in the bag.
Yeah, he's still putting things together, honestly, and getting more comfortable in the NBA. He started off as, you know, a shooter, right? Trey Murphy III, he's got 2 threes in his name. He can shoot extendo clip out very far out. He can knock down threes. stretches the defense, has a one dribble pull up. And I think the athleticism is starting to show because he's using it. He's always been athletic, but now he's dunking on people, around people, through people, one hand, two hand, 1 foot, 2 foot, alley-oops, off the dribble, whatever the case may be. And he's showcasing his talent, but also his development, his comfortability, putting the ball on the floor, attacking a closeout, his comfortability, knocking down threes, but also being able to shoot floaters and finish with contact. I think it's a testament to his development. It's a testament to his hard work. And he's in the gym early. He's in the gym at night. I catch him in there, you know, at night a lot of times when I go in to get some reps and kind of work on things. He's in there shooting Corey Brewer, extending his range 2, 3, 4 feet behind the line. He's working on his game constantly, and he wants to be better. And I'm happy that he's getting a chance to show his growth and his development, and we're continuing to try to put him in positions where he can succeed, and he's taking full advantage.
Shout out to Corey Brewer, Gator, 2-time champion. That makes me feel old, seeing him in the as an assistant coach on a team. But so you get a lot of questions about Zion here, but I wanted to ask you something a little different. There was a story back in August, I think, in GQ, where Zion guessed that there was about 80% of the league that was into anime. And so he's into anime. He was at Comic-Con, I think, for this particular San Diego Comic-Con for this story. What do you know about a sort of his interest in anime, but just the league's interest in it? Because 80%, man, and I don't know if you're just talking to, you know, an old dude here, but 80% sounds like a lot.
Yeah, I don't know if the 80% is true or not, but I know that I'm a part of the 20% for sure. I can say that. I haven't really watched since, you know, Dragon Ball Z Pokemon days. But I did enjoy it when I was watching. But I think part of that 80% comes from the fact that our league is getting younger and younger. You got a lot of guys who are one and done. You got a lot of 2000 babies. You got some 2002 babies, some 2003 babies. And pretty soon we'll have some 2000s.
Jalen Duren was born in 2003.
It's crazy. Like, so you think about what they grew up around, what they were exposed to. It makes sense. Z is a huge anime lover. To the point where, like you said before, he attends Comic-Con, he attends the events, his commercials, you know, are starting to shift more towards that. He has shoes dedicated towards it. He definitely enjoys it. He's all about it. And I'm happy for him. Like, he's found something that he enjoys doing. He takes pride in that hobby. And me personally, I'm in a different stage, a different phase of life where, like, I don't have the luxury or the time to just sit back and watch it. And when I do, I'm watching like Netflix shows and I don't know, Love Island and just random mindless shows, random mindless shows that make me laugh. And
there's something to be said about shows you can just turn on and turn the brain off like that. Yeah. That is very comforting sometimes. I'm surprised that like, so first of all, I was laughing because I saw like Joel Embiid was listed as one of those players who's into anime because he posted something one time about, hey, just watching some anime before a game. But I'm pretty sure what they had him on showing was like had him watching was Rick and Morty, and I'm like, Rick and Morty is not anime, like that's just hilarious. But I was surprised to hear that he was into it. A little bit surprised Steven Adams is big on anime. I do think that you're wrong. I do think that he's wrong, rather, that 80%, that's a big number. But I just don't really get the appeal of it. And this, I guess it's just going to be me sounding old again. But if there was anybody who would sort of be an anime character, it would seem like it would be Zion. Like, he's got this explosiveness. Like, you could absolutely create a character just built on Zion. And I feel like a few years into his career, that's probably going to be the case. Like, he's got to do some sort of connection if he's into it that much, right?
And I think, to be honest with you, that might be one of the reasons why he's so attracted to it, because of his explosiveness, because of the way he plays the game. It's eerily similar to like superheroes taking off, right? Like before they fly, like how they like charge up and then they like fly away. Like that's what it kind of looks like when he jumps. And I think the way he works, you know, I always reference Dragon Ball Z, right? When you got Vegeta, you got all these villains, but you have that those times in which they kind of train and they're isolated, right? And then they become Super Saiyans, like they hit that like next level. And I think he relates some of his life to some of these anime storytelling versions of himself, right? Like he was injured, he had to train, he kind of like went into hiding, if you will, to where like people didn't see him. Like the commercials for Jordan were like, where's Zion? Like, I heard he was meditating underwater, I heard he was doing this, I heard he was doing that. Like, and first of all, it was a dope commercial, but second of all, like, that's kind of how he moves, like a superhero that's not really well known, right, in terms of like what he does in his spare time. And I think he likes it like that, and now he's kind of coming out of his shell.
Well, that's great. I think the more sort of those details about him get out, I think the more full picture that is painted about Zion, I think the more likable he's even going to get. Because I remember just, I think it was Amina Kimes' story in ESPN, the magazine, back when that was still a thing. Some of his high school stories and some of his like poetry, interest in poetry. And as like his teachers were like very intrigued by him because he was just such a like quiet and curious kid. Like, I think the more the full picture of Zion is painted, the more you're going to see a guy, not just on the basketball court, but off the basketball court, that we just kind of never seen before in this setting, in that, you know, that role of, you know, super duper star.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you are into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Yeah, and I think the way he's played, obviously, like we're talking about the fact that we won 9 of our last 11 without B.I. for a majority of those games, without me for 4 or 5 of those games, without Herb for 3 or 4 of those games. Like, our starting lineup, I don't know if we've played 10 games together, like, with our starting lineup in rotation, full of guys who impact the game off the bench. But a lot of that is a credit to him. You talk about superstar power. You talk about ability to take over a game. The way he's taken over games as of late, offensively and defensively, I think it shows the progress, it shows the development, it shows him being healthy and people being able to kind of see the comfortability level that he has and how dominant he can be when he's on the court. And he talked about the work that he put in this summer in those articles about how, you know, he was trying to show different parts of his game. He wanted to show that he was more than just what you've seen, and what we've seen was a lot, right? A monster. He's showing that he can defend, he can block shots, he can guard 1 through 5. And he can pass. And I think that's an underrated part of his game. And I think the cool part is that we're still missing a guy who can go get you 25, you know, 7 and 7. And he's virtually unguardable. And we're missing another guy who can hold, you know, a guy that averages 30 points a game to, a 4 for 20 night.
Last thing on Zion real quick, because I just remember watching him the last couple of years and thinking, that's not how humans supposed to walk. Like, he just, and you can't tell me he's not hurt in some way. How's he walking now? Is it just a pimp walk? Is it just his gait? Like, does he look more normal now? Or was I right before that that shouldn't have been the way he was walking?
He's got the Zion bop, man. Like, the way he does, right? Walks, it's just like a bop. And it's like, he's just so explosive. He can't walk normal. Like, the legs is too strong. I think he's just got so much strength that he can't just like have a normal stroll. But he walks like that all the time, you know, whether he's in sweats, whether he's in his pregame fit, whether he's on the court. That's just the way he walks. He's very healthy. Like, the way he's exploding around the basket and dunking, he's in great shape. He's taking good care of his body. He's eating properly. He's getting his work in, you know, before or after practice. I mean, you see the speed with the basketball in his hands. It doesn't make any sense. It's like a, you know, it's like the running back for the Titans. Like, he's like a man amongst children. And even when there's other like strong men around, he makes them look like little boys. Like, the way he bumped OG from Toronto when we played against the Raptors, OG is strong, like strong, you know, with a K or a G or however you want to spell it, like 6'8", 245, doesn't miss a meal. lifts weights all the time. Z bumped him, and the way he fell down was just like, I get it. Super Saiyan strength is very prevalent.
Speaking of not missing a meal, I thought it was sad that Zion couldn't answer the what's your favorite side dish on Thanksgiving because he knew that the internet was going to have a go at him. I thought that's sad. Go ahead and talk what you eat. Doesn't matter. Just be yourself, Zion. I don't care about social. But speaking of another potential anime character, Anthony Davis seems to be playing like one again. Mm-hmm. In his last 10 games, as we speak, he's averaging 34.2 points. This is the crazy one. 15.4 rebounds, almost three assists, 2.9 blocks, and 1.3 steals, shooting 63% from the field and 41% on threes. I almost don't want to say the three-point shooting because it's probably the least irrelevant number, because if you look at what he has been doing in the 20 games this year, which is half the games he played last year. Last year, he only played 40. But in those 20 games, compared to last year, he is shooting way more from inside 10 feet. From under 10 feet is where 71% of his shots are coming from, versus last year, 57% of his shots came from under 10 feet. So he's clearly knows where he eats, and he's whether he's sticking there or LeBron's putting him in those spots a little bit more, maybe Russell putting him in those spots a little bit more. It seems to be the formula, like, hey, get your shots because this is your team. I think earlier in the season, I said it, I don't think you said it, but I said he wasn't capable of this anymore for a full year. Like, we looked at those stats that he had in the year that he swept you and the Blazers and then went on to lose the Warriors. Like, he was averaging 30 and 12 in that series and, you know, shooting 56, 57%. So are you surprised a little bit that he's back at this? Because it feels like if this is the guy you're going to get, and you can't assume injury even with him, if this is the guy you're going to get, like, hey, he might be back in that top six mix and kind of scary in the playoffs.
I'm not surprised he's playing well. I'm surprised he's being this dominant. Like, this is MVP caliber. Like, I think Woj talked about, this is first team all NBA. This is NBA MVP, NBA All-Star Game MVP type numbers. This is Shaq calls it SLN, Shaq-like numbers. Like, the 15 yes. rebounds is crazy. The efficiency, shooting 63%. Knowing that he shoots jumpers is insane because he's, like you said before, majority of his shots are coming within 10 feet, but he's still shooting threes. He's yep. still shooting those jab jumpers that he loves so very much, and he's making them. And I think the difference in this year to past years is obviously he's been healthy for a longer stretch of time, but I think, believe it or not, that LeBron injury helped him. And I think LeBron talked about how he's the number one option, right? We're going to play through AD, but in reality, you know, who does the team look to when they get the rebound? They're looking for LeBron. They initiate the offense. They're looking at him because he's LeBron. He's arguably the greatest player of all time. He's the guy you kind of look to. He went out. People were writing the Lakers off, talking about how their season's over. There was a lot of issues about Russ and how can he play with everybody, move Russ to the bench. They play through AD more than they ever have before. And he begins to deliver. And I think the team began to get more comfortable playing through AD. He began to get more comfortable getting back into more of the New Orleans role that he had, where it was him and Jrue Holiday, but it was more so him as the 1A guy and Drew as the 1B. And I think with the Lakers, there was really no 1B without Bron, right? It was just one, and then there was two, three, four, five to the rest of the guys, with everybody deferring to him. I think he enjoyed that, and he began to get more efficient, and he got comfortable. And I think when Bron came back, Bron is looking like, this is exactly what I wanted. Like, I wanted you to be the first option. I wanted the team to play through you because I can save my energy, I can pass, I can rebound, and I can take over in the fourth quarter if I need to. So I think that injury was a blessing in disguise for him because it gave him more touches, more time of possession, a higher usage, allowed him to get into rhythm, allowed the Lakers to get into rhythm. And then when they bring Bron back, the team is off and running because they were already guarding at an elite level. They just weren't making shots. Once they play through AD, it doesn't matter if everybody else makes shots because they got a double team them, and it opens up rotations.
Well, let me ask. So I'm looking at the honestly, the most interesting part of looking at Anthony Davis's stat history is in 2013, 14 and 15, he was a power forward. In 16 and 17, he was a center. In 18, power forward again, then center, then power forward. And the last 2 years listed at center. And he's famously known for not wanting to play the five. But I mean, A, do you think, like, I find that kind of silly. You're in the middle, you're banging with, you know, big bodies, regardless of what position you're at. But when it's clearly the best for you in today's game, like, do you think it was like, an injury thing because he's just got like maybe seeing ghosts, and because he's been so injured so much, he wants to like stay away from the basket. I don't really know the reasons why, but it seems like it's an easy answer, man. Like play the five. It seems like it's working for you now.
Yeah, I think there's a negative connotation associated with skill players playing center. First of all, I think they don't like it. Like KG used to always talk about how he's 6'11", but we all know he wasn't 6'11".
That's so dumb. No offense, but like, it's come on, like six, like of the center versus the power forward. Like, I mean, I get that, I get it, but it's just like that's for the reason.
I don't understand it because I'm not in that position. But like, KD is probably 7 foot, but he'll never claim it. You know what I mean? Like, they'll never claim it because they don't want to be looked at that way, when in reality it just so shows you have supreme skill set. But I think that was probably a factor. The other factor was that he doesn't want to bang with centers, and the way the game used to be played, you remember, like, centers were real centers. Like, they were strong, they were husky, they were more, you know, Robin Lopez types, where you're going to get hit by screens, it's going to hurt. You got the Steven Adams type bodies where guys are strong and you have to bang in the post for 80 games. Like, it's a lot. It's a lot on the body, and it takes away from your legs, and it's hard. He wanted to go against fours because they were smaller. He's able to still dominate and use his strength, but he's still quicker than the fours. With the fives, he's not able to be as dominant physically, but he's just quicker and more skilled and can get around him. So I think it was a combination of those two things. But to be honest with you, he's dominant at the five and the four. All he has to do is stay healthy, and he's going to be dominant because he has a supreme skill set. Like, his skill set is, you know, once in every, you know, generation. Like, to be able to dribble, shoot, pass, can face up, can post up your big, can get around like guards, but can also get around bigs. Like, these numbers he's putting up are like him in his best form. Like, it's the best version.
It's basically you if you would have kept growing. Like, because he had the same story, right? He was a smaller point guard when he was in high school.
And now that and now he has the skill set of a guard on a big's body.
Well, the part that's interesting to me too, and not that like everybody's chasing their individual accolades or whatever, but LeBron's gonna pass Kareem in all likelihood this year. So, you know, points are important to him, but not so important that he is not willing to allow Anthony to do this, right? Because like, if this is the case, like if this is a clear, not just, hey, he's our number one guy, but he's MVP caliber guy, then LeBron is going to be the John Stockton of the group. Like, he needs to just set him up as often as possible and not worrying about the scoring. Does that, in your view, if you sort of project forward, does that work to making them contenders again? Like, obviously he's LeBron, he could adjust to anything, but is it still good enough, that team good enough with him playing the setup role and then sort of picking his spots?
I think Bron understands that, first of all, it doesn't matter who his teammate is, he's breaking that record. He's going to get that record any means necessary, and he's so dominant and skilled and understands how to manipulate a game to where, like, he's going to get it. I think he was more so worried about the longevity of a season and the toll it takes on your body. He didn't want to have to play 38 minutes a night, have a crazy usage for 82 games, and limp into the playoffs. So his thought process was, we're going to play through AD. First of all, it slows the game down, right? Slows possessions down, gets you in the bonus faster, which creates more points per possession for everybody. Third of all, it allows him to save his energy to where he can take plays off or quarters off and just play through AD, then turn the switch on. I think his thought process was, for us to win a championship, AD has to play at an MVP-like level. That means he has to have a high usage. And then obviously Bron can close games. He can shoot that, you know, step back to freedom jump shot that he loves, you know, where he looks down at the ball and raises up. But he can also not have such a wear and tear on the body that we've seen from a guy who's 20 years into the league. Like, that's a lot of wear and tear with Father Time to have to do that for 38 minutes a night and then go into the postseason and play against a bunch of 24-year-olds who, you know, you watch some of these Eastern Conference teams and Western Conference teams where, like you said before, you play against a Memphis team who might sit everybody and still beat you. Like, and they're still going to be that much more fresh come March, April, and May based on how they strategically played this season. So you have to combat that by sometimes throwing it into the post and playing through other guys.
Wait, you called it the step back to freedom. That's just the step. That's not his step back in particular, right?
I call it the step back to freedom in general, where you step back, but the LeBron, like, glory, look at the ball, step back. Like, I don't know. They call it the strive for greatness step back. I think that's what
I've always laughed at that one because it's like, wait a second. So your move is to tell the defender that you're going to shoot it, because that's all you're doing. You're not losing them by looking at the ball, right? It's not like the Steve Smith look one way and dribble the other. This one's just like, oh, you're telling me what you're going to do. I just have to prepare to contest. Am I wrong on that? Am I crazy?
It's wild to think about that he's literally patented that move to where like he does it and laughs about it, but he gets it. He gets the shot off very often. He like looks at the ball and then he shoots it. And I think a lot of times guys are just guard him and like, he's not going to do this. And then he does it.
Right.
He's not going to do this to me too. And then he does it again.
I mean, I guess it is a tribute to his greatness that he can announce what he's about to do and still do it. But
I'm going to shoot now. I'm shooting the ball now.
If you, I was laughing about this because I was asked this on a show earlier today. Is Anthony Davis's play enough of a reason for the Lakers to give up those draft picks? And I was like, wait a second, those draft picks are from 2027 and 2029. Like, of course they're going to give those things up if they think they can get a player for right now. Like, I don't think that was ever the question. It was just a matter of, will it translate into something that's going to make us champions again? And if AD is playing like this, then yeah, an addition to this team, not a superstar, you're not going to get that, but some quality addition to this team is going to get you back to that level. So worry about those, or F those picks and worry about them later.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a good trade for everybody, right? Like, you get what you're seeing now is the best version of Anthony Davis. You get the bubble ring. You have chances of more years of this version of Anthony Davis. And then you get all of these picks, right, that turn into players, that turn into trade chips, that turn into you being able to build out a roster. So I think it was a, you know, win-win. Obviously, one team was trying to win a championship right away, and another team was trying to look to build assets towards a championship down the road. I think, hopefully, you know, speaking about New Orleans, both teams are able to accomplish what they wanted, right? Lakers got their ring. Now, hopefully, we can get our ring, and it's like everybody's happy. Everybody goes home saying, thank you, we appreciate your service, thank you. AD, great, great job bringing us all these assets, and great job for you putting on for LA and getting a championship.
Who else in the league has a move that's a little questionable? Like a, that's just their own, because I know, and this is going to take us to this next conversation, but like the Jordan Poole, like he is, his inside out is crazy.
He got a nasty in and out,
but he's also got a crazy carry that he does a lot, and they had to sort of work it out of his game apparently, because there was one game here in Miami that he called for that three times famously, and I don't know if he's got called for it a ton more, but I'm assuming he's cleaned it up a little bit. There was a game just the other day where they had 10 travels called. It was Warriors again versus the Mavericks, so maybe that was probably Jordan Poole there too. Steve Kerr said it's the most he's ever seen in a game. I'll let you get back to that question about who's got a questionable move, but all the traveling, like, why are they kind of, they always have points of emphasis, right? Every single year. And a lot of times it sort of dies down after, you know, 20, 25 games. It seems like this one, there's just like a concerted effort to get it out of the game, especially, and this is just my own theory, there's these, you know, Twitter detectives and social media detectives who are just pointing out all the time when Luke is traveling, when Giannis is traveling and carrying the ball. Like, I think those sort of add to the, hey, let's call travels in the league, because it's been going on for 20 years now and they're just trying to fix it all in 1 year.
Yeah, I've been watching those travels. There's a guy on Instagram that's been posting. I think he posted Ja Morant today with some of his carries. But I think twofold. First of all, as an NBA player, has the traveling gotten out of control before they were calling it? Absolutely. Have we been carrying since the game was invented? Absolutely. Now it's just a matter of them consistently calling it. But yeah, some of those guys are dribbling, you know, not as fancy, more fundamentally sound. But I think as the game has progressed, like even Allen Iverson, like he had a big crossover, right? And sometimes they called it, sometimes they didn't. I think it was more so who was doing the move, whether or not it was going to be called. And I think now there's a point of emphasis on cleaning the game up. And I think the issue is, and we talked about this on, you know, some calls with some of my friends across the league, guys watch us and they mimic us, right? You got AAU players, you got high school, you got college players, and they feel like when they get to the league, they have more freedom to carry and travel. So they basically develop all of these bad habits from watching us and get to the league and get away with it. So now they're trying to tighten up, I think, the way the game is being played and the way the game is being watched, because grassroots basketball is huge. And you want young kids to understand the importance of fundamentals and not be traveling and carrying and trying moves that they see us do. So if they tighten up the way we play, then I think that tightens up the game of basketball and makes it better. But I think it's hard to be in a game where there's 10 travels. I got a couple of travels called on me this season where I catch it and I jab one way and go the other way. And historically, you kind of slide the foot and you usually get away with it. Now they're
just kind of split watching. The feet and go. Yeah.
And it's, I mean, it is a travel, but it's frustrating because, you know, I got 10 years of doing that move, right? And then you got like certain guys who've just been doing moves for a long time. And Kyle Lowry talked about it. There's a Miami Heat game where they call like seven travels.
Well, I was just wondering, because like what I understand the idea of like, hey, Allen Iverson, one-on-one, hey, if you carry and on your crossover, obviously it's going to be, you know, a jaw-dropping move, but it's an obvious advantage. A lot of times guys are just carrying for no advantage, like Giannis bringing it up the court, Luka when he's kind of getting into his mid-post where he just doesn't have to. Like he's not helping him in any sort of way. And so I'm just wondering, like, is that what they're trying to clean up? Hey, don't make us look bad all the time. And then, you know, when you get away with one on a nasty move, maybe we'll let that one go.
Yeah, I think they have to call obvious travels. Like, if it's obvious, like, you have to call it. You can't let it go. But I think now there's just a huge point of emphasis on being deliberate about calling travel. And
we should be more specific. It's actually more discontinued dribble / carry. Actually, it's both. You're right, because a lot of the splitting of the feet before the drives, that's been getting called, and a lot of the carry. So it's been pretty much all of it. Any sort of advantage you get with the ball in your hands, they've been trying to call.
And I think you're spot on with the embarrassment of the game, like making a mockery of the game. Like, come on, man. Like, why are you carrying like that? Like, you don't have to carry like that. And I think some of it is just point of emphasis on referees watching pivot feet, because guys will switch pivot feet in a hurry. We've seen the compilations of videos where guys are walking with the ball as the ball is inbounded, forgetting to dribble. Like, guys will do those types of things because we play 82 games. There's so much going on in your life. And sometimes you just black out while you're playing. And you're like, oh, that really switched pivots? It's like, yeah, you did. And you're like, okay.
Well, maybe they should just shouldn't let you do that in practice, right? They should have, you know, whoever's playing the official in practice, call all of those, even when you're walking up the court carrying the ball. Do you think that guys have made adjustments this season? Have you talked about it within the Pelicans at all?
Yeah, I've talked about it because we got a lot of guys who obviously we throw the ball into the post.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You know, JV, we throw the ball in the post to Giannis. When B.I. is playing, we throw the ball in the post to him. So you get those swings where it's quick decision, right? Catch and shoot, catch and drive, catch, go. You know, you watch Patty Mills play for years. A lot of, you know, European basketball players catch the ball on the run, right? So that there is no worry of pivoting and traveling. But I have some guys who I've had to talk to on our team where it's like, yo, they're calling travels even if it's close. So you got to catch and shoot, or you have to be running as the ball is coming to you, because then you're not going to travel. You're just going to be running and catching it and putting it down. So I've had those conversations. I've sent guys clips. I've sent clips of myself like, I should have shot this. Look at this one. They calling it on me. They for sure going to call it on you. Like, you know what I mean? Especially younger guys on our roster. So it's definitely a point of emphasis. It's something we've talked about. It's something that we've talked about with Monty when we have those referee meetings in the beginning of the year where they go and visit each team. They talk about things that they're trying to take out of our game, things that they feel are not making our game look in the best light to the casual fan and to the loyal fans. Like, we want this game to be as pure as possible, right? Like, by pure, I mean, like, playing the game the right way. Like,
right.
Fouls are fouls, travels are travels, carries are carries, not exposing.
Don't bastardize the game.
Yeah, manipulating the game is tough. It's a tough situation, yeah. But it just looks crazy because you got guys that have played for 15 years, like Curry, and then now they're calling travels. And he's like, well, I've been doing this move for 1,000 three-pointers. Like,
so just for context, there were 63 palming violations called in October and November. There were 67 such calls all of last season. That's in a story by Tim Bontemps of ESPN. So it's clearly a point of emphasis that they're not just kind of letting go after a little while. Is this the amount of time you think, 20 to somewhere between a 20, 30 game range where guys are will have adjusted and you're going to see a lot less of it?
I think you'll see less of it, but I think it's depending on players, personnel, and how fast they're willing to adapt, because you can know they're calling travel, but you can be like, this is the way I play, like, right? And you just continue to do it. And It's the onus on the referee to call it. And right now they are calling it. If it's close, and then sometimes you got to watch the board. You're like, did I really travel? Or did he really travel? And you're like, yeah. And then like guys will say, right. Did I travel? And you're like, yeah, you travel. Yeah, you carried.
In this, the Tim Bontemps story, there's a chart from Kevin Pelton that shows basically what I'm saying is that every single year, if there's a point of emphasis, it'll show up in the first 20 games. And then after that, those calls will drop by a lot for the rest of the season. And so he looked at those rates with travel calls, and that's pretty much the same. Like, so my guess is we'll see a lot less of it, but guys have been put on notice, as it were. And I think speaking of put on notice, Trae Young had a little incident over in Atlanta. So the reporting from The Athletic was that he and his coach, Nate McMillan, sort of got into a disagreement about when and where Trae Young would do his rehab for his shoulder and whether or not he was going to play that night. Nate McMillan said, hey, if you don't do the rehab, you know, during walkthrough and come to shoot around, you know, play off the bench, just don't show up. And he just didn't show up. And afterward, Trae had an exchange with a reporter in which he basically said, I'm going to keep this under wraps. We're going to keep this private. It's unfortunate it got public, but we're going to keep it private. And he got asked over and over again and still kept that same keep it private energy, which I thought was good of him to handle it that way, because as much as him giving his side of the story might have helped him publicly in terms of perception, he's better off in terms of his team keeping that under wraps and being the guy who doesn't, you know, make it public anymore. But I'm just wondering where you thought about when you hear about a guy getting into this level of issues when he's A, your main guy, and you're talking about sort of rehab and when and where he's going to do it. It doesn't seem like these are often things that sort of just get out there and become, you know, issues publicly for a team.
Yeah, this is a sticky situation, but I think from a player's perspective, I understand what Trae is going through, right? You want to keep private matters private. And this is a situation that probably shouldn't have gotten out to the public, but it's unfortunate that it did. I don't know the circumstances and situation in which they're going through in Atlanta, but I have played for two teams and I have friends on a lot of different teams across the league that have different rules, you know, in terms of where they rehab at, how they rehab. I've been injured, unfortunately, a number of times in my career with different injuries, in which some of those injuries I've rehabbed at the facility before practice. Sometimes I've rehabbed during practice. Sometimes I rehabbed after practice. And there was times in which Portland felt like it was best for me to not come to the arena because there was no need for me to sit with a boot on, you know, with my foot down for 3 hours and get up and go to the huddle and sit back down. And there's another timeout because of the swelling. So there's different circumstances in which some teams won't mandate you come to the arena. They won't mandate you rehab at the facility. They may allow you to do it, you know, on your own terms with your own people, or come in before practice so that you can get home. Maybe you're a family oriented team. They want you to be able to spend more time with your family. So there's different circumstances and situations that I've seen occur. I think for Trae, I think there's just obviously a communication error or lack of communication. And he basically tightened it up by saying, this is a private matter between our team. And I'm not going to divulge any more information. I don't feel like that's necessary. And I respect that. I respect that a lot, because far too often bad things can occur from sharing your side of the story. And then it becomes more of a story and it gets picked apart on our television sets each day.
Well, I mean, and the other part about this is, and you don't know how much this affects him or what this has to, or how this sort of projects to his teammates, but he's shooting 40.8% on the season. That's his worst of his career. His rookie year, he shot 41.8. He's shooting 29% from three, which is not good, especially for a high volume 3-point shooter like him. It's a year where you're supposed to see a jump from them, and especially given his playoff performance against Miami, who was just kind of invisible for a lead guy. Like, there was a lot of questions when, okay, you've got DeJounte Murray. You've got a guy who can handle the ball. Doesn't, you know, you don't have to be the shot creator and the finisher, et cetera, et cetera. And yet this is the way he's starting the season. I'm sure there's a lot of frustration there. I'm sure if his shoulder played a part in how he's shooting, which is the injury that we're talking about him rehabbing, that obviously has affected him. But I'm curious how much of this sort of carries over into your attitude, but also how your teammates sort of see that, right? Are you just having a bad season? Are you just, or are you the reason we are having a bad season and you need to change things up? Like a lot of that stuff, because they've had multiple team meetings, according to Nate McMillan. This isn't the first time they've had issues. So It just doesn't feel like everything's vibing over there. And when he's at the center of it and shooting this poorly, you can't help but look at him, right? Even if you're his teammate and say, hey, something's got to change.
Yeah, I think winning cures all. I'll say that if they were winning, this wouldn't have been a story. If he's shooting 48% from the field and 45 from three, this isn't a story. It's a story because they're not playing well as a team. They've had multiple meetings, as you referred to. He's not playing well individually up to his standards, right? And then he sits out of a game, they go and win as a team. So then you hear the rumblings and the whispers, and that's the way the gossip goes of the league, right? But when you start winning games, everything kind of goes out the window to where it's more free-flowing. Oh, Trey wasn't there. Who cares? Mm-hmm. They're 12 games over 500. You know what I mean? Like, it's different, right? But when you start losing, they begin to pick your team apart. They begin to pick the players apart, and they have to point the finger at someone. So I think this is an unfortunate situation that has snowballed, but I think winning can cure all, right? Like, him and DeJounte continue to figure out how to mesh together. Getting the big fella back, I think one of the big fellas is hurt. They got a lot of issues in terms of availability right now, which is what you're seeing across the league. Injuries kind of dictate performance, which dictates results. So availability is helpful for a lot of teams in the league. And when you have injuries to top players or rotation guys and other guys aren't taking advantage of the opportunities, it's costly to your roster and your success.
You know what I wonder is, like, what is the sort of unwritten rule? Whose responsibility is it? When you've got a guy who is not your main guy, right? Not your main scorer, not your main distributor. And that guy should be the vocal leader, right? Like, so just to be specific, like, I think, having talked to a handful of the Hawks players over the last couple of years, John Collins is a great team leader guy. I think he is, he can be that vocal leader guy. But I don't think he is in the role. I mean, he is in a great role. Like, he's a $100 million guy and all that stuff. But it's not his team to sort of lead. And I'm just curious, but he's been there, you know, his whole career. So I'm wondering how that, and I know it goes team to team, but how does that generally work? Like, can somebody sort of take the reins who isn't Trae Young or even DeJounte Murray, who just got there? I mean, I guess you could speak to this from last year going into this year as well. But like, can somebody else just sort of take that pressure off of Trae and say, hey, Trae, you do the scoring, you do all that stuff, I'll be the team leader?
Yeah, that can happen, but that takes dialogue, right? That takes conversation. That takes an adult in the room or a group of adults to kind of figure out, hey, like, this isn't my team, but I'm going to take on this role. I'm going to be the leader. I'm going to be the one who holds people accountable. But the second part of that is people have to respect whoever that guy is. Right. If you don't respect them, it's not going to matter. It's just like the working place, right? You work a 9-to-5. Doesn't matter what the roles are, right? If you don't respect somebody, it's just one ear and out the other. I think the same thing goes for our locker rooms. It's like, you have to do certain things to earn your peers' respect. And that doesn't necessarily mean you have to play a lot. Like, it's the way you move, the way you behave, the way you act, the way you prepare. People begin to gain respect for you. You know, you could have a guy who's not in the rotation be one of the leaders of the team because of the respect the players have for him. And I think that's a situation in which they'll continue to grow together. When you have new players in new environments, they tend to not want to step on people's toes. They kind of just are blending in. They're playing their role and they're watching and observing on how things are going and figuring out how they can interject into certain things. Because you come in and you're new and you start speaking too early, too often, then you become the voice no one listens to, right? It's like, oh, he's always talking. He's trying to be the rah-rah guy. It's like, play your part first and then you step up into a leadership role first by leading by example.
And that's the part where I just wonder, you know, if this is just ripe for somebody to just go ahead and take that responsibility, because, I mean, what he's shooting is just like awful. And you don't even want to like make it into a blame situation. You want to make it into, hey, Trae, like, don't worry that much. Like, there's a lot on your shoulders. Let me take something off your shoulders and see what happens. Because Let's be honest, like, if this season tanks, like, Nate is probably going to be a question mark in terms of whether he's going to be around. They'll probably look to move a lot of pieces. They've already talked about trading John Collins over the last 2 years, and that hasn't moved yet. So you might as well just go ahead and try something. Like, it's not going to be Clint Capella. Maybe it's DeJounte, or maybe it's John Collins, but it's got to be something. Somebody who maybe echoes Nate McMillan and maybe who gets the rest of the team on his back. Because it just seems like it's too much for Trey right now. Not that it's too much for any one person, because there's a lot of people doing that, but he just doesn't seem like he's altogether prepared for all of those responsibilities right now.
Yeah, they got some things to figure out, like you said before, but I think if they can start winning games and get healthy, they'll buy time to figure out leadership. They'll figure out how to mesh, how to gel better so that these types of things don't occur going forward.
Oh, wow. I didn't even see this. I just read, not to change the subject, transition, but they just gave away. So we now have one of those cups like in hockey for the team with the best record every year. The Maurice Podoloff Trophy for the team with the best record. I had no idea.
News to me.
It's kind of like, what do they call that trophy in the NHL? The President's Trophy? It's not the President's Cup, right? It's the President's Trophy.
Is there any money attached to that trophy, or is it just a trophy?
You know what? It doesn't look like it. It doesn't look like it at the moment. But hey, the ball is crystal. So there's nice. That.
I wonder if we can pond it. Just kidding. just kidding.
All right, CJ. I think we pretty much covered everything we wanted to this week.
Yeah, I appreciate all the listeners tuning in as always. Hopefully we can get a few wins this week. Got a nice homestand in which we play the Suns twice. Detroit, go on the road. Utah twice, come back and play the Suns again. So we got a chance to make some leeway and make some movement up in the standings.
I remember when Utah was good. Was that a couple of days ago? I think that was a masterclass by both the San Antonio Spurs and the Utah Jazz early in the season to say, hey, we still got people that know how to win. We're just not interesting in winning for much longer. And they absolutely nailed it. But anyway, we'll talk to you next week, CJ. We'll be right back.